This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik. We're talking about vision problems among children today. And we've been hearing that vision problems are on the rise among young children and it can have lifelong consequences for them. But detecting whether your child has a vision problem can be difficult, especially if you don't know what to look out for. So today I'm speaking to Dr. Chung Yi Fong, consultant ophthalmic surgeon from the International Specialist Eye Center, to learn about how to improve eye care among children. And this is something that parents in particular are going to be very, very invested in and curious to know about. Good afternoon, Dr. Chung. How are you today?
Good afternoon.
Dr. Chung, can we take a few steps back and actually just look at the development of vision in a child? Perhaps walk us through how does vision develop from whether it's the time of birth or even in the womb to early childhood?
Yeah, the visual system is very complex. But suffice to say that when a child is first born as a baby, the quality of vision is not very good. As a way of measuring, he probably can just about make out face or shadows of the face of a mom or a dad. But 3 months old, their vision is actually beginning to become quite good. So they can take interest in looking at the mom's face. When you're feeding, the child may smile at you and begin to engage in terms of eye contact. By 6 months, their vision is actually quite well developed to the extent that they probably can pick up very tiny things, although their coordination for using their vision is still not perfect. Certainly by 1 year old, their vision is almost like adult. So the crucial time of development of vision is in the first year of life. So any eye condition that jeopardize this process in the first years of life can have a very serious consequence to the child's visual development in the future.
What about during the time when the fetus is in the womb? What aspects of vision are being developed at that stage?
Yeah, basically, in order to see, we need to have the connections, the formation of the eyeball itself and also its connections with the brain. The development time in terms of the actual beginning of the eye is actually quite early in childhood. So by the time when they reach about 24 weeks or 20 to 24 weeks into the pregnancy, the eyeball is actually functionally, anatomically, is already quite well developed, with the exception of the blood vessels formation, the retina, which is still in the infancy stage. But otherwise, the eye can be quite functional. Therefore, you can have a premature baby, who nowadays we can be born at 24 weeks, and they can still develop into a normal eye, even if they're born at that age, despite being out of the mother's womb. But the visual system is a very complex part of human. It's probably the most complex because about one third of our brain is actually responsible to process visual information. So, which is in a way relative to its size, it probably utilizes the largest proportion of the brain to function.
So, in the first year of childhood, when it is most crucial for the development of vision, what could go wrong that would affect a child's visual skills?
Yeah, there are many things that can go wrong, some of which will be obvious to the parents, some of which are not so obvious to the parents. For example, because the vision development in the first year of life requires actual visual image forming on the retina and subsequently being transferred to the brain, you need to have a clear formation of that image on the retina. So anything that deprives the child from that, for example, a cataract or a droopy lid or merely just requiring glasses, let's say the child is very highly short-sighted or long-sighted, that would mean that the image that's being focused on the retina is not clear. And as a result, this unclear retinal image does not allow the brain to develop normally. So anything, any visual deprivation in the first year of life from any cause can result in a poorly developed eye. Now, if your visual deprivation is in both eyes, parents typically notice that quite quickly because a child obviously cannot function normally. But if the visual deprivation is only in one eye, that lies a problem because the child will function normally, but then you may miss the abnormal eye being not developed well. And typically sometimes when they notice a problem, it's sometimes very advanced. The child may be quite grown up, and therefore reversing that can be quite challenging. Yeah.
Okay. What are the visual skills that children learn? So on top of the physiological, anatomical aspects of vision development, you know, when it comes to using their vision to navigate the world around them, what are the skills that are involved?
The child is programmed in some ways to recognize faces. So this is one of the first things the child is interested in. So you will notice that a two-month-old, three-month-old baby will be very interested in eyes, interested in the mouth. So if you do visual tracking assessment on children, you will notice that they spend a lot of time looking at the eyes and the mouth. And this is very important for bonding because it's how the child bonds with the carer by just imitating sometimes the carer's expression. So if you smile at the child at this age, they will smile back. So this is all part and parcel of their development. Now, after that, they will begin to take more notice on other things. So little toys may interest them, little objects may interest them. And when they get a bit older, when they have begin to have motor coordination for their hands and feet, they'll begin to try to grasp or to grab objects, you know, that's offered to them or that comes within their visual field. Now, and that, of course, continues to develop. Then they will develop things like permanency, you know, the concept of when they notice something is there, if you hide it behind a screen, the child realizes that it's still there behind the screen, for example. So that's where peekaboo becomes interesting at that age. So this is how, you know, it's a very complex journey for them. It takes some time to develop. But as they get older and older, then the other quality, like three-dimensional vision, like what we call stereopsis, becomes more important in terms of their learning how to balance, how to walk. The ability to appreciate three-dimensional space become important in their as they navigate the world around them. So visual development is actually very, very complex. It's probably the most complex organ system that we have in the human body.
And it plays such a key role in enabling us to do, even if it's just reaching over and picking up something, right? And being able to gauge the distance, its perspective and all that. So what are the common childhood eye conditions that would, you know, interrupt all those processes?
There are many. I would categorize them into the ones that are dangerous in the sense that if you miss diagnose or you have a slow in diagnosis will result in either loss of vision in the eye or even to some extent a loss of life in the case of an eye cancer in children. To ones that are not so severe in the sense that it will still affect vision, but you can potentially reverse its effect to some extent. So let's start with the more dangerous or more crucial things that we shouldn't miss, such as a condition, a childhood eye cancer called retinoblastoma. It only happens about 1 in 20,000 births, so it's not a lot. So you get about 100 cases in Malaysia per year. But this, if it's undiagnosed, can kill the child. Or in severe cases where it's undiagnosed, may necessitate the removal of the eye, for example, and render the child blind. So these are the things that we cannot miss because missing it is has such a poor outcome. Then you have got things like cataracts, childhood cataract, which happens in 1 in 5 to 6,000 births. So a bit more common than retinoblastoma. But it is imminently treatable because we can quite easily remove the cataract and then rehabilitate the child's vision.
Is that similar to cataracts in adulthood?
The diagnosis is similar in the sense that it's a cloudy lens, just like in adult. But the surgical approach is completely different because the child's eye is a lot smaller. And of course, it's during a very crucial time of their life whereby any deprivation of vision will result in a lazy eye or what we call amblyopia. The medical term for lazy eye is amblyopia. And we need to treat it in a timely fashion. And the surgical approach is far more difficult because the eye is a lot smaller. the feel of the lens is different. Those are all very technical things, you know, it becomes more challenging. So therefore, pediatric cataract is normally a subspecialized areas whereby you need people who do it a lot and do it well to be able to handle them properly. Then you have got other conditions like glaucoma, which is one in 10,000 cases. But by far the commonest, which now you are going to into the realm of things that are not so dire if you miss it, but nevertheless can affect a child's vision. For example, refractive error. In other words, the child needs glasses, but is not diagnosed when they're young. For example, you can have a child that has got good vision in one eye, so they behave normally, but the other eye could be short-sighted by 1,000 degrees, and nobody has a clue. So if you miss the boat, in other words, you didn't give the timely glasses to them, then they will develop a very lazy eye in that eye with 1,000 degrees. And so that subsequently, if you give them glasses, they still cannot see because the connections between the eye and the brain has not formed properly. And this is what we call amblyopia or lazy eye.
So it's linked to the refractive condition.
Yeah, linked
condition.
To refractive
so
condition, correct.
Yeah. I guess the original condition is the short-sightedness.
Correct.
But because it was not addressed, then the short-sighted eye becomes a lazy eye.
Precisely.
Right.
Yeah. So the crucial time to intervene, of course, we want to intervene as soon as possible, but it will be good to intervene before 3 years old for a better outcome. But certainly, lazy eye can be reversed up to the age of 9 to 10. But the later you discover it, the harder it is to rectify because the density of the lazy eye becomes very severe and the child find it very hard then to comply to treatment because the treatment involves covering the good eye, forcing them to use a bad eye. But what child wants to use a bad eye to see, right, if you can use a good eye? So there will be a constant struggle between the child and the parent as to comply to the treatment. And it becomes a very, very challenging issue if you discover the problem too late.
At what age usually would you see children coming to you with refractive problems?
Okay. Typically, we tend to see them preschool because nowadays, parents are being more informed. They would normally want to have an eye checked before school starts. So we do get them between the age of 5 to 6 before formal school. We ideally want to detect them even earlier. So ideally, we want to detect them before the age of 2 years old, if possible. But the problem is that to diagnose a child with refractive error before the age of 2 is more challenging and in the realm of, you know, eye doctors or optometrists. So the parent will need to bring them there to have a check.
What kind of eye checks would you do for a child that young?
We can do what we call retinoscopy, which is a technique of using a special torch by shining this special torch in the eyes and looking at the way the reflex of the eye behave and then neutralizing that reflex using some lenses, we can actually estimate to a pretty accurate degree the refractive error of children, even if they are not verbal. That means before they can even talk, we can actually
check. Before they can tell you whether they can see something
or not. Yes, we can certainly do that. So it's a fallacy to think that you need to be able to verbalize before we can check the power. You don't have to. I can easily check the refractive error of a one-month-old child just using this technique to a fairly high degree of certainty.
Okay. Yeah. We're talking about childhood vision problems today with Dr. Chong Yi Fong, consultant ophthalmic surgeon from the International Specialist Eye Center. We'll be back after this break to discuss more about how to look out for the signs and symptoms, how parents can identify that their child may have a vision problem. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. In the studio with me today is Dr. Chong Yi Fong, consultant ophthalmic surgeon from the International Specialist Eye Center, and we are discussing vision problems among children. Do you see that children are presenting with vision problems at a younger age today?
Certainly. On average, we are seeing more children presenting earlier because we are facing an epidemic of refractive error problems, in particular myopia or short-sightedness. The whole world is becoming short-sighted.
Right.
And this is something that's been happening for the past 50 years, despite the fact that the genetic pool over 50 years wouldn't have changed much. But certainly, the world is becoming short-sighted. There is a series of very interesting studies that is sponsored by the World Health Organization, WHO, that was conducted about now 15 years ago, looking at the refractive error in children worldwide. And Malaysia is one of the countries that was in the study population. And in that study was published in 2007, but the study was done in 2003. By the time Malaysian children are 12 years old, one-third of them have refractive error, one in three. Now, that was 15 years ago. I reckon today the figure is nearer to one in two. And you can verify this very easily by going to your children's school and just have an eyeball look and see how many of the children are wearing glasses. Now, the principal problem is myopia. And why does myopia become such a big issue now? And because children are becoming more and more short-sighted earlier and earlier in life, they will struggle in school because they can't see, so therefore they get referred to optometrists or people like myself, ophthalmologists, to do an assessment, and therefore we see more and more of them. The cause of myopia is multifactorial. There are many causes. So genetic factors plays a role, so therefore it's more common in East Asia, so among Chinese, Japanese, Orientals will have a much higher rate of myopia. Mm. And this rate has been increasing such that countries like Singapore, the myopia rate is now 90% by the time you reach 19 years old.
90%?
90%. So 9 out of 10 will be short-sighted. So they become the normality now. People who doesn't wear glasses are non-normal, mm-hmm. which is a reversal of the fact. Places like Taiwan will be 85, 90%. Hong Kong, very similar. In Malaysia, we are probably following the same trend as well. Now, so there's a lot of interest as to what causes myopia, what drives myopia in children, and why does it happen so easily? So that we have pointed, we have gathered some information about this. For example, if you compare the population in an urban environment in China and compare that to a rural environment in China, mm-hmm. the children have got a very different myopic progression rate. In urban China, this is again the study sponsored by WHO, is about 35%, one-third.
Mm-hmm.
But in rural China, it's nearer to 15%.
Right.
Despite the fact that they are fairly homogenous and mm-hmm. they're all ethnically, they are Han Chinese. So there's something in the environment that's causing it. So what it is? So we have distilled down to a few factors that we think is important. Number one is that children are not getting enough light exposure during their daily life.
Now, and you mean sunlight?
Sunlight.
Not light from...
Not indoor light, yeah. Like the intensity of light has to be sufficient because the child's eye is growing and the process of eye grow to normality is a process called ametropization. So it's a mouthful. And this process requires adequate light exposure mm-hmm. because we are supposed to be outdoor beings. We're mm-hmm. supposed to be outdoor creatures. And our growth is regulated by our environment. So light is important. So study shows that if you spend 2 hours a day outdoor, you can actually slow down myopia progression down to a minimum. And this study had been done in Australia, and therefore they're not encouraging a lot of people to spend outdoors among children. But to translate that practice in Malaysia is difficult because we have problem with the sun, it's too hot, it's too sticky, it's too humid.
You are safety issues for children
and all the rest. And they study long hours, you know, children don't come back home until 7, they have tuition classes. Yes. So it presents an enormous challenge to get the adequate light. I would want to encourage the educationists among us who are listening to allow children to spend more time outdoors in school, number one. Number two is that if it's very sunny, let them wear their sunglasses if they have to, but spend more time outdoors, all right?
At what age should we start encouraging
as
this?
Young as possible, yeah. We are not advocating under the hot sun because that would be uncomfortable. You're talking about early mornings, late evenings, but the sky is still bright when the luminance of the environment is still sufficient to help the children. This is one factor that we realize that is very important. Secondly, there's this theory of like if you spend too much time reading or looking at near things, it also promotes short-sightedness. Now, the evidence for that, while it seems to make sense, it's not very strong. All right, there's a subset of children that seem to be susceptible to that. If you have excessive reading, excessive indoor, it may be challenging in the sense that their short-sighted may progress. But that may be just a factor of the fact that you spend a lot of time indoors, you're not spending a lot of time outdoors. So so the reading near work story is not so convincing from the research point of view. Nevertheless, we would want to advise children as a good practice to spend 20 minutes reading, and you have to take at least 2 to 5 minutes off your book and look in the distance. So you look 20 minutes near. You relax your focus by looking, picking a far distance object and just look far away for 2 minutes. Now, resting here doesn't mean that you go from books to the iPhone or the or the handheld devices, but to be able to relax your focus. So that may help a bit. There are other medical interventions that we can help them with. For example, there's now an eye drop called it's low-dose atropine. Atropine is an eye drop that we use to dilate children's eyes prior to examination. We find that these eye drops in a very low dose, one diluted to 100 times, also reduce the progression of social blindness by up to 70%. So this is one of the biggest discovery in the past 5 years in ophthalmology, that for the first time, we have something that can actively slow down or retard the progression of short-sightedness.
But who would you use this on?
Any children who has progressive myopia or progressive short-sightedness.
Okay. So they would have to show signs of myopia already, and then this would reduce their progression.
So 70% progression reduction is significant. In other words, let's say a child is discovered at 100 degrees short-sighted, and if the natural process will be 1,000 degrees when they are 18 years old, if you use the drops, they may end up only 400 degrees. So you have a substantial reduction in the future.
So when it comes to correcting myopia, the use of glasses obviously is a standard form of correction. How much will that reduce progression?
Okay. Glasses are essential, number one, because you need to see clearly. So you have to wear glasses. But correctly prescribed glasses are also important to slow down progression. If your vision is constantly blurred and not clear, the rate of progression, particularly of myopia, is actually faster. So there's this old thinking that if you have myopia, don't wear glasses. You know, wait until it's very bad before you put it on, because wearing glasses causes progression. It's not true. I want to categorically say that that is not true. Many studies have been done to disprove that theory. It's simply not true. So if you have myopia, you should wear the appropriate corrective glasses, and that helps slow down the progression. Now, there are also many different kind of glasses, like they call it myopia control glasses or bifocal glasses, that are used to slow down progression. They work somewhat, not as effective as we hope it to be, but they do slow down myopia by between 10 to 15% progression. The other device that is now becoming more popular is a contact lens that children wear at night, whereby the contact lens artificially flattens the cornea so that during daytime, they are no longer short-sighted, but it's a temporary thing, because if you don't wear the contact lens at night, then the myopia just simply return. Now, that contact lens called autokeratology, or auto-K in short, can also slow down myopia by, on average, about 30%. But the drops is the most effective because it slows down by 70%. Some parents use all this method in conjunction with one another for the most benefit. But of course, there's also cost issue involved. The downside to the auto-K contact lenses is the risk of infection. Because if it's not taken care of well, you put contact lens in children and they sleep with them, then the risk is substantially higher than normal contact lens. So that is the one downside to that particular technique.
Especially for young children.
Or it's also hard to put them on as well.
And even for adults, the care of using contact lenses is so crucial. So on top of myopia becoming so much more common and you're seeing it at a younger age, has the progression intensified as well?
Certainly, yeah. The rate of progression has increased dramatically, such that the amount of people, the proportion of people who are in the category of what we call pathological myopia, in other words, the degree of myopia is so high that it's associated with complications in the future, such as retinal detachment, degeneration of the retina, or premature cataract, or glaucoma, will increase quite quickly once you exceed minus 6, which is 600 degrees, to minus 800 degrees. So it is our aim as ophthalmologists to try to prevent the proportion of people entering into this category, because it means that they are lifelong risk of losing vision due to one of the conditions I mentioned earlier is significantly higher. For example, retinal detachment rate will increase tenfold if your myopia exceeds 800 degrees.
And 800 degrees actually doesn't sound so high. I mean, if I just ask around people in my my circle who wear glasses, that seems, I think mine is 600. Okay, yes. I'm old, so. But that's frightening.
Yes, yeah. So we are seeing the initial phase of the epidemic, which is the myopia. But the second phase of the epidemic will be the diseases related to high myopia, which will come 30, 40 years down the road.
Mm.
So we are confronting this issue and we need to sort it out now, because we can't wait until then to sort it out. We have to really tackle this issue right now. And,
right.
and this issue cannot be tackled by ophthalmologists alone, because there are not enough of us. It's coordinated effort by the doctors, the education authorities, parents, you know, to be able to have a way of slowing down the progression of myopia among children.
So what would be the one single most important thing that you would tell parents and educationists and perhaps primary care doctors that could at least pave the way for the corrective measures to take place? What is the one most important thing that we must do as a first step?
I think we need to, if you're talking about an intervention for the whole population at that young age, is to spend more time outdoors and to cut down perhaps your near vision activity.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that would be the one thing that is doable, imminently doable, but we have to just think about that as an important priority.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, because the drops, the atropine low-dose drops also is very effective. That is a preventive, but it's a medical preventive measure. And the problem with that is that you need to see a doctor for a bottle of the drops, which makes it difficult to apply it across the whole population.
Mm.
Right? But I would say, yeah, the most important part is actually to change our habit, how we spend our time.
A lot of parents are concerned about the use of devices, but also linked to the blue light that's emitted from the screens. What do we know about the impact of blue light on vision?
The blue light story is in relation to a condition called macular degeneration, essentially a condition whereby the retina becomes damaged by this high-energy blue light. So if you look at the light spectrum, you know, the rainbow colours of the light, the part that is high energy, which is towards the ultraviolet and blue light spectrum, has high energy by nature. And as a result, it can cause oxidative damage to the retina, to the cells of the retina. Now, the theory goes that if you can reduce the exposure, then it's protective for the retina. And this certainly has got evidence for it in terms of animal studies and so on. But then to translate the intense blue light that we get from the sun, for example, to blue light emission from devices, there's a leap.
Right.
Yeah, there's another leap, because the intensity from the blue light from devices is actually very little compared to what you would get exposed to the sun. So whether that low amount of exposure actually would also cause the same problem, we don't know.
Mm.
And we can't make that conclusion. Just because the sun, high-energy blue light cause damage, does not then mean that little amount will cause the same problem. Just like drinking a lot of water may kill you, drinking a bit of water is necessary. So it's not so simplistic, not so easy. Second thing, blue light actually affects sleep. So our sleeping habit, we call the normal variation of, you know, you feel sleepy at night and you feel awake in the daytime, the circadian rhythm of our body depends on blue light as well. So that's a very important aspect of it, to regulate our circadian rhythm and UV light, of course. And if you then deprive a child of blue light, or you interrupt their blue light exposure by having special lenses, it may also affect their sleeping patterns.
But again, you're talking about blue light from the sun.
From the sun, from the general environment. On the other hand, children should not be using devices late into night, because it affects their sleep as well. Not only does the devices normally stimulate their thinking and their mind and so on, making them excitable, but the blue light can also disturb their sleep. So you'll find it harder to sleep if you've been looking at devices before you go to sleep to the bed. This applies even for adults as well. So the blue light story is a bit complicated. It's not so straightforward. Yeah.
But to put it in perspective, if you're spending time on devices, that means you're not spending time outdoors,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Essentially, that's the problem. Because if you look at children nowadays, they don't exercise enough, they don't go outdoors enough, because all their leisure time is engaged with devices or reading.
Do we have screening programs in place to detect vision problems among children at a young age?
Okay, in Malaysia, we have eye screening in schools. So if you go to national schools, the school teacher will then do a visual test when you are in primary one. And then if there's any problem, they will refer the child to us. But from the perspective of reversing amblyopia or lazy eye, that may be a bit late.
Because you were saying...
Precisely. The sensitive time is much earlier.
Before the age of three, right?
Yeah, okay. The earlier the better.
Okay.
So when you come to 7 years old, you're already coming to the tail end of the reversible or what we call plastic time. The brain is still plastic to change. So once you're above, it's difficult. And secondly, the vision test done in school may not be so properly done. I remember doing it when I was young. We all cheated, right? We all look and we can't see. We ask our friends. Our friends tell us, and then we just recited it out. And the teachers may not know any better. So it's not done so well sometimes. I think they are done much better now because they are constant training to help teachers do a good job. If you go to a private school, some private schools will have optometrists who come in to do the testing for you. That can be more advantageous because it will maybe done more properly by trained ophthalmic professionals.
Okay, all right. I'm speaking to Dr. Chong Yi Fong, consultant ophthalmic surgeon from International Specialist Eye Center, about vision problems among children. When we come back, just a quick roundup of how parents can look out for warning signs, how we can do our own simple checks at home, perhaps from a much younger age, so that we can detect vision problems early. We'll be back after this quick break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. In the studio today is Dr. Chong Yi Fong, consultant ophthalmic surgeon from International Specialist Eye Center. We are discussing childhood vision problems and particularly refractive problems like myopia. Dr. Chong, you've said that the world is experiencing or facing an epidemic of myopia. It's alarming that children are developing short-sightedness at a younger age. Many more of them are developing it. And the rate of progression is becoming much more intense as well. So and this could lead to, if they are not diagnosed and corrected early, this could lead to long-term vision problems like retinal detachment, retinal degeneration, and premature cataracts. We're talking about a generation of children, or perhaps several generations of children, who will be facing that as they get into adulthood, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So then, you know, if the earliest that a child can access a screening program, at least at the population level, would be in at the school, the primary school stage, which, like you said, is a little bit late to start instituting those corrective measures, then what can parents do at home to look out for the signs of vision problems?
Yeah. There is a bit of challenge in noticing the problem because if a child has got poor vision when they're younger and if they're pre-verbal, they won't be able to express that. In fact, they won't be able to make a comparison because they have no other eyes to compare with. And therefore, you would not know actually what normal vision is like. So it is a very challenging aspect of it. Of course, the gold standard of screening at a young age is to be done by a professional, but of course, we are limited by resources. Now, what can parents do? Okay, maybe for pre-verbal children, parents will need to really look at the child's visual behavior. Simple things like that, like if the child moved towards the television to see, to watch the telly, it may tell you that the vision is not clear if they're seated further back.
Because they're trying to compensate.
Yeah, they're compensating by moving closer so they can see clearer. So that's a very simple sign that you can pick up. The other thing I like, if the child squint the eye means that they narrow the lids so to see, especially see in the distance, and that's also a very good telltale sign of reduced vision for distance. Or if the child turned the head to one side, instead of having a face forward viewing position, they turn their head to one side to see, that is another telltale sign of reduced vision. Typically that of astigmatism, which is also another form of refractive error that can reduce a child's vision. So these are some of the things that a parent will pick up. Now, of course, for verbal children, it's maybe a bit easier. You can also quite simply do some eye tests yourself. You know, if you're sitting in the car, waiting in the traffic light, if the child has already learned the numbers, you can just merely ask them to read the car plates in front of them, the car in front of them. And that's a very simple, you can make it like a game and you can just quite easily check that. But you have to do it one eye at a time. Just because the child can see with both eyes open, the plate in front, does not mean that both eyes are good. It could be one eye good and one eye not so good. And you won't pick that up if you only do both eyes at the same time. So these are some of the things that you can actually do. But since children are going to preschool earlier and earlier, listen to what teacher says as well. If the teacher says that, you know, your child is not learning so quickly, or when she's copying things from the whiteboard, is a bit slow and a bit hesitant, then it's time to bring the child for a proper assessment.
Would you be able to assess based on their, say, ability to trace numbers? Because at preschool, that's what you start learning.
Yeah, the for certain refractive errors, yes. For example, if you're hyperopic, which is opposite to myopic, which is short-sighted, myopia is short-sighted. Hyperopia is a situation whereby the child can see, but the effort to see is substantial, particularly for near. So you'll find that children as such do not like to do close-up work. So they do not like to read. They do not like to do colouring. They just have no interest in reading. And that could be just purely because they are long-sighted or hyperopic. I don't like the term long-sighted, by the way, because it implies presbyopia, which is a condition that affects old people.
Yes, yeah, we do tend to.
Yeah, which is not the same. Long-sighted actually purely mean that the child have to make a lot of effort to focus in order to see things clear.
Right.
Yeah. Now, if that should happen, then the child obviously need to be seen. So children who lose interest in study or doing close-up work could have a problem with their eyes. And not because they're lazy or they're an attitude problem, but just purely because their eyes. So they need to have their eyes checked.
So the role of the teachers is very important.
Oh, certainly,
well.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And obviously, as parents, we're always telling our kids, don't read in dim light. Does that actually have impact?
To some extent, it does. We have mentioned earlier, ambient light is important. So if you do reading, when you need to use your eyes in a very intense manner, it's best that you must have enough lighting. Children also like to read in the dark. And when they read in the dark, because it's in the dark, so things are not so clear. So what do? They bring the reading material further forward to their nose. And that's also no good because of the distance. Reading distance now is now narrowed. Mm. So those are all contributory factors to myopia progression to some extent. So generally, we advise that if the child is outdoor, don't bring reading material outdoors. Leave the books at home. You are sitting in the car, you're already outdoor. Engage the outdoor environment, right? Look out from the car. Don't let children read in the car.
Right.
They're already outdoors. So look out. If you are going to go to the garden or go to the park for a walk, don't bring your books along, you know, because if you just sit down by a tree, under a tree or whatever, and you start reading the book, then in some ways you nullify the effort that you're making going outdoors. So enjoy outdoor activities, engage the world around you. You know, don't just engage your handphone or your screen and your books.
I think that goes for adults as well.
Certainly it does.
We've talked a lot about myopia. Is it worth very briefly mentioning any of the other common, the reversible vision problems?
Sure, yeah. The other big category of conditions that we see in children is a condition called squint. Or strabismus. Squint essentially means that the eye of the child or an adult is not aligned. In other words, the direction of the eyes are not in the same direction. They're not pointing in the same direction. So we call this squint or strabismus. Now, squint affect up to 1% of the population. So it's actually very common. Not as common as myopia, but it's common enough. And it presents a few challenges. Number one, if your eyes are not pointing in the same direction, it may be a sign of something else going wrong. For example, we mentioned earlier about eye cancer in children. So one of the early signs of eye cancer in children, which is very rare, is squint. Because one eye can't see, so as a result, the eye begins to drift away. And the first thing you notice is actually a squint rather than a tumour, because the tumour is well hidden inside the eye. So any children with squint need to be assessed properly because they can harbour a very dangerous condition. Now, squint also affect a child's visual function. For example, if you have a squint that makes it hard for you to align your eye and you try very hard to use both eyes together, that effort tires you out and you can also lose interest in whatever you're doing. Squint can also be a cosmetic embarrassment. Okay, while it's cosmetic and some people take that lightly, but it's actually have a very severe psychosocial effect on the child. We have done studies in Malaysia on 5 years old and then in primary school children. A child will begin to discriminate against a child with squint as early as 5 years old. In other words, a child notices something is wrong and the child has a squint, will be discriminated against.
Right.
And this discrimination won't end there. It continues to adulthood. We have done studies in adult as well, whereby you send in photos for interview and a person with a squint almost never get called for an interview.
Right.
Purely because when you see a squint, you naturally discriminate them. Yeah, this is how we are. We want to look for symmetry and perfection. And when you don't see that, you don't engage.
When it's in the eyes, it's very obvious.
You can't hide that. You know, if you have a missing finger, you can hide that in your pocket. But you have a squinty eye, you can't hide that. So we want to address that earlier better, because the outcome of intervention is so good that you shouldn't miss the boat.
Right.
Yeah.
What would be the ways that you could correct it?
Some of the squint can be corrected just optically with glasses. So we can actually, certain eye conditions, for example, we mentioned earlier hyperopia, which is long-sighted, can typically cause a convergent squint. That means the eye turn inwards. And that can be easily correctable with just glasses alone. You buy a pair of glasses, the eye will straighten up, and that's it.
So it doesn't progress?
Then it doesn't progress, Now, some squint requires surgical intervention. Mild squint can be dealt with exercises. For example, you can do some visual therapy. Exercises can help you control the squint. You don't get rid of it, but you can control it better. But for severe squint, which is cosmetically obvious, or very large angle squint, whereby controlling it is impossible, then you want to straighten the eye. And you can do a very simple procedure to straighten the eye that takes only 15 to 20 minutes. So for the effort of 15 to 20 minutes bother, you can straighten your eyes and enjoy the benefit, I think it's well worth considering. So it's something that we need to also tackle.
Do you have a final message about addressing vision problems among children?
Okay, I just want to end by saying that myopia is the single biggest disease affecting the human beings, because there's no other disease that affects up to 90% of the population. Myopia is just one of them. And because it has got such a big implication in terms of visual quality as well as the risk in the future, we need to tackle this. And the time to intervene is when the children are young. So have your children's eye tested. If you suspect something is wrong, see someone to have the eyes examined.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chong. I've been speaking to Dr. Chong Yifeng, consultant ophthalmic surgeon from the International Specialist Eye Centre, about vision problems among children in Malaysia, especially the rise of short-sightedness. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.